You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome to Life Talk. This is Margie Mansko-Breen, Director of the Respect Life Office for the Archdiocese of Chicago. We have an exciting show planned for you today, and I'm joined in studio by Emily Warpinski, my office's Youth Outreach Coordinator. Welcome, Emily.
Hey, Margie. Good morning.
Good morning. And also a surprise guest in studio. He was supposed to, I was expecting him on the phone, but he dropped in. Devin Jones, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
All right. Most people probably know who you are. You're kind of a bit of a celebrity here in the Archdiocese in this radio show here, the 9 to 10 o'clock hour. But I'm glad you're here with us. And what we've got today, Devin, you've joined us to talk about something that you brought up when you were in our office about the ACLU in Illinois going mm-hmm. around the community at the Chicagoland area to talk about contraception.
Yes.
What happened there?
They have some type of initiative to kind of, they classify contraception as like a basic human right. Along with some other issues that I don't think the Catholic Church necessarily agrees with them with. And they were having these kind of town hall meetings, dialogue sessions at three different libraries in the suburbs of Chicago. And the one I went to was on Monday at the Chicago Heights Library. And there was a panel of three people. One person was the executive director of the Chicago Abortion Fund. Another person was a lawyer for the ACLU Illinois. And the third person was a young woman who had one of her abortions funded by the Chicago Abortion Fund. And they talked about how basically contraception was a basic human right and that taxpayers should pay for it. It should be something that's covered by insurance without co-pays, so basically free. Mm-hmm. And also they classified abortion as a form of contraception.
So, and is this in response to the Catholic Church and all, you know, Catholics around the country just up in arms over the HHS?
I think it was part of the, in a response to this HHS mandate that has come down. I don't know if it was in response necessarily to the Catholic Church, but
they
definitely
to,
yeah, but
well,
definitely for people who were opposed to this mandate.
Well, I think what we're seeing is, you know, the ACLU is doing everything possible to support
right.
the administration, the Obama
right.
administration, and everything they do. So
right.
Anything controversial like contraception, gay marriage,
right.
Abortion, things that we don't believe in,
right.
they're trying to go out and sell the community on.
And that's their next one is gay marriage.
Oh, my
goodness. The next group of meetings will be on gay marriage.
So, you know, one thing I forgot to ask you about, and I just skipped over it. I went straight to the ACLU. If you don't mind, I want to backtrack mm-hmm. and talk about the March for Life, because I believe it has a connection
right.
here. Your experience with that, and also Emily, just, you know, give a summary of how that went, and then we'll go back into the ACLU issue. So sorry, it's a little disjointed for our listeners, but I'd like to touch that first and then move on to this important discussion on contraception.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the March for Life this year was great. We were supposed to have 10 buses, but, you know, God has other plans. So we had a little bit of a struggle with the blizzard the night we were supposed to leave, and one of the buses ended up canceling. So we reorganized everything and jammed everyone on 9 buses and took off about 12 hours later. So we still made it to D.C., and we, albeit 12 hours late, and I was in charge of the young adults, the college students, young adults, and I helped out with the Gospel of Life group. And we went to the Students for Life of America conference on Sunday, and everyone loved it. They had a great time and learned so much, and it was a long day and I was exhausted and I was kind of rounding up everybody trying to leave at the end of Sunday. And I was like, guys, let's go back to the hotel. It's, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock. And they couldn't believe we were leaving. Like, they were like, what? It's not over. I'm like, I know, but we have to get up early. And they're like, I can't believe it. So they were pretty upset we left. We had to leave early, which I thought was a good sign that they didn't want to go.
That's awesome.
That was great.
Good job.
and then Monday, we went to Mass at the Verizon Center. And I heard from one of the seminarians who went with us. He was down on the main floor. And the Mass is just so beautiful. And all the priests are processing in. And before Mass starts, they introduce all the bishops and the cardinals. And, of course, Cardinal George is the first one to go. And so after they introduce him, like, everyone just starts cheering. And it was just, we were, like, so loud and cheered for so long. Even
we had the longest cheer, definitely.
Yeah. All even right. After Cardinal Worrell was like, that's going to be tough to beat. So that was so powerful. And then, the march itself was just, again, amazing and just surreal. It was raining. I mean, the weather was not great. And it was cold.
I know.
And
even with an umbrella, my hair still got completely soaked.
I think everyone, like, how did that happen? Yeah, I think everyone got soaked. Everyone's signs are all soggy.
I felt like I liked it better, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, it made it more of a pilgrimage to know that.
Have a little suffering.
Yeah, 500,000 people almost out there, regardless of what type of weather it is. Mm-hmm. We're like the postal service or something.
Postal service.
Well, you know, we're out there rain.
Oh, rain, hell, snow, sleet.
Yeah,
I don't know if they go by that, but especially when they're cutting back a day. But yeah, I know. I remember I ended up catching up with you guys, and there's Emily and a bunch of college kids, or I don't know if they were in college, but chanting, and, you know, you guys made up some chants, and that was pretty cool.
Not about cool, but
well,
we were trying to be loud and joyful. And
no, but that's good. Yeah. No, I think it is. It is cool. It is very cool because you know that's the one thing that in the coverage, in the media coverage, they couldn't get around how joyful our folks are.
Yeah,
or you know, that's a consistent thing at the March for Life. We're consistently joyful. So, any other points that I think are that you think are highlights?
I think just the fact that at the march everybody was very joyful and there seemed to be more pro-choice people there this time. I mean, there were only like 20 as opposed to the 5 that were there last year. But
oh, and I think they were on drugs.
Yeah, well, they were. was the thing, and you could see the difference in how joyful and kind of lucid all of the pro-life people were versus the pro-choice people who were just angry and yelling things that didn't half the time have anything to do with abortion.
I know, and I saw a poster that had a rosary and it said, pray for abortion.
Right.
Oh, it's just, I had to like double take. What?
It's
pray
it's,
for
it's
it?
It's about anger and personal attacks as opposed to them actually getting across, because the facts don't hold their argument up.
Yeah, definitely. And the best thing is just kind of let them be, you know, and not to try to engage them because then you just get sucked into their anger.
Right.
And that's just not the right way to go. Well, thank you. That was great. And so let's get back to that ACLU discussion because I remember debating with my husband. We were debating on a radio show. I think she was one of the attorneys for the ACLU.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet you she was at this panel that you were at. But oh my goodness, just, you know, it was all about contraception.
Right.
You know,
right.
It was, you know, I just basically got down to it and, you know, boiled it down, her argument. I said, you just want to throw condoms at these kids.
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, you don't want them, you don't think that they can wait till marriage. You just don't, you know, you don't.
Well,
think
they admitted that they were very honest and said, yes, that's what, in one breath, they would say that contraception didn't work because, you know, you think of the African American community where there's a 50% abortion rate, but condoms are available in almost every public school.
Yeah.
So they would say that it didn't work, but then they would say, that's why we need to give you more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that doesn't make sense. If it's not working, why would you give me more of something that's not working? You're just causing more abortions, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even on, it was, what is it, Channel 32, if you call it, WFLD, whatever, Fox Chicago, you know, they had, they were talking about contraception for men yesterday in the news. It was like, contraception for men? This never ends, you know? And they keep bringing it up. Every few years you hear something about when are men going to, you know, take contraception? And she said, But basically, when it boils down, abstinence, abstinence is really the only way to go,
right,
to prevent pregnancy, disease, right, all that. And you know, this reporter who was on, she was pushing contraception and all this and education, and but she said when it comes down to it, abstinence is the only way. So I'm like, yay, thank you.
The other thing with this panel is that they seem to be pushing it more on minority women than anybody. I mean, they kept going back to this, we should be funding it because minority women can't afford it. As if being a minority means the same thing as being poor.
Was the panel comprised totally of minority women?
Two African Americans. The young woman who she couldn't have been, I think she was 23. She had had an abortion. Mm-hmm. She was African American, and the woman from the Chicago Abortion Fund was African American, and then the ACLU lawyer was not African. She was white. But the only one who spoke with factual evidence, you know, to kind of support the argument, was the person who wasn't black. And it was for me, being a black person, it was equally embarrassing because you had the two people who were black up there, and they were angry, and they only spoke in feelings, and they didn't really have a coherent argument. And so they kind of looked like buffoons. And the only person who looked smart up there was the person who, you know, it's just interesting how the pro-choice crowd always gets someone who is seemingly unintelligent from the black community to speak on their behalf, as opposed to pulling from people who maybe have a little bit more knowledge. Well, because they probably wouldn't be up there advocating for something like abortion.
Yeah. Now, you asked a question at this panel.
Mm-hmm.
What was that question?
The woman from the Chicago Abortion Fund stated that because we pay for unjust war and other immoral things, that we should pay. She said she feels that we should pay for contraception and abortion, and people who don't agree with that, they just have to deal with it and pay for it, just like what we do with unjust war. So my response was, just because we pay for one immoral thing, or what she thought was immoral, mm-hmm, if we're paying for one immoral thing, why would we add to that by paying for something else that's immoral? And I also wanted her to connect how paying for something like public education, which is a right and which the state has to fund, how is that connected to paying for contraception? You know, sex is an optional activity. Yeah. You don't have to do it. So why should taxpayers foot the bill for something that you don't have to do? You need an education to be a valuable member of society. You don't have to have sex to be a valuable member of society.
Yeah, right.
So why should we have to pay for your pleasure or whatever?
It's a bad analogy.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
they wouldn't even entertain the question. So we had to write them on cards. And when I asked that question, they watered it down so much that it wasn't even really the question that I asked.
Oh, my goodness. And you said that, how did they treat you at this
event? The woman from the Chicago Abortion Fund, again, who I said was African-American, I was the only African-American in the room and the only, obviously, African-American male. She was rude to me the entire time.
Mm.
And she didn't know whether I was pro-choice or pro-life or whatever. It was just very interesting how, and then her friends came who were all African-American. And, I mean, it was like I was a leper or something. I was standing in the room and they would sit and talk about, you know, after the event was over, they were talking about me and I could hear them talking about me, you know, and it was like,
don't you hate that?
Yeah. But the thing is that why would you single me out of all of the people?
Yeah. Maybe you were the most vocal.
I wasn't.
No.
There were other people who
against.
Yeah, they were, and they were vocal about it. They
is
were
it because
other people
you're
who
African American.
I think it was.
Okay.
I think it doesn't fit into whatever her box of being, you know, because I'm pro-life. I guess she would assume that I don't support candidates for president that I should be supporting or whatever her issue was. But
yeah,
that's always the case for African Americans who are pro-life, is that oftentimes we are shunned by the very people who should be embracing us.
Sure,
a prophet's
sure.
never accepted in his home territory.
I got you.
Not
yeah.
that I'm a prophet.
Well, maybe you are. Well, thanks, Devin, for joining us, and thanks for your insights. You know, God bless you for going out to this and just doing that and being active in as a Catholic, as a pro-life person,
yes.
you know, just being out there and pushing the envelope, yes. asking the questions. And that's what we need to do. So I do know that isn't there another one coming up tomorrow?
Yes.
So if people want to go, I'm not exactly sure how they find out about it, but you know, they can call our office too.
Yes. And go to the AC. You can register. You have to RSVP at the ACLU Illinois website. If you Google search like ACLU Illinois War on Contraception, it'll come up.
Oh, okay.
And they have to RSVP in order to attend the event.
Or they can call us, you know, if you're interested, yeah. and we'll help you find it at 312-534-5355. 312-534-5355. Well, thanks, Devin. And we're going to head to a quick break. And when we return, we will be joined by our special guest, Debbie Vinege of Children of God for Life. So don't go away. Stay tuned to Life Talk.
We attract and keep young people in the church?
What can we do to re-energize some of our ministries?
What does it mean to be a team-friendly parish?
How can we all work together effectively?
These questions and many others will be answered at this year's Parish Leadership Day on Saturday, February 18th at Loyola Academy in Wilmette. As we celebrate the Year of Teens and Young Adults, we encourage parish leaders to bring their active young Catholics to this exciting day-long event. There will be workshops in English, Spanish, and Polish, and many of these sessions are geared to our young Catholic leaders. As always, there will be a luncheon dialogue with Cardinal Francis George, and His Eminence will celebrate our closing Mass. For more information and to register, go to www.artchicago.org or call the Office for Counsels at 312-534-8364. That's www.artchicago.org or call 312-534-8364. We hope to see you Saturday, February 18th for the best ever Parish Leadership Day.
When a neighbor's cupboards are bare, we help. When our cupboards are bare, we need your help. The past few months have been the most difficult for families that come to Catholic Charities for food. Demand is up and donations are down. Help us restock our shelves so we can feed those in need this winter. Visit CatholicCharities.net/food or call 312-655-7525 to find out how you can help.
Welcome back to Life Talk. This is your host, Margie Mansko-Breen, Director of the Respect Life Office for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I am joined in studio by Emily Warpinski, my Youth Outreach Coordinator, and on the phone we have special guest Debbie Vinege, Executive Director of Children of God for Life. Welcome to the show, Debbie.
Thank you, Margie. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. I've been wanting to have you on for quite some time to have you share about some of the stuff that you are working on. It's very interesting, but just trying to find the moment, or, you know, the right moment in what's going on throughout the year for this really deep conversation. And I know we have until 10 o'clock to talk about, well, squeeze everything in that you do and that you're working on right now. But right now, tell us a little bit about your organization, because I know you focus on bioethical issues of human cloning, embryonic and fetal tissue research. But give me some details, you know, more about your organization. How did you get started? What's your background that would bring you into this type of work?
Well, Margie, that's a really loaded question, but we'll take it a little bit by time. Children of God for Life was formed back in 1999, actually, under the Clinton administration, because at the time they were considering federal funding for, you know, embryonic stem cell research. And so we began educating the public about the differences between adult stem cell research and embryonic stem cell research. So that was the way our organization first got started, because at the time, nobody really even knew what a stem cell was. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, and I had learned about this information just as a pro-life person, you know, a mom, a concerned Catholic, and I began doing a lot of work with the U.S. Conference of Bishops, with the Pro-Life Secretariat Office, to learn more, to get more details, and to help them in any way I could. Mm-hmm. So it was during this time that I then found out about some of the wide use of aborted fetal material in various applications, and what was going on in that side of the house as well, because the two of them are very intimately related. You know, we're talking about the destruction of human life and the harvesting, actually, in the case of embryos, of their stem cells, and in the case of aborted children, their organs and tissues and so forth.
And then for our listeners, in most cases, all these embryos are sitting in freezers somewhere, right? In labs from IVF patients who have extra embryos?
Yes, that's right. If you're talking about embryonic stem cells, that's where those embryos were coming from. And it was very interesting, because back in the time when they were talking about, oh, there was 400,000 spare embryos that could be put to use, in reality, the vast majority of those were earmarked for future pregnancies. They were not something that, you know, parents were willing to just give away and give up for research purposes. So that was a very misleading thing. And, of course, they went on to, you know, claim that there were going to be people walking tomorrow if we could just use those embryos.
So then how did you, so the main, I guess the main, my main understanding of your organization or my interaction with you has always been about ethical vaccines.
Correct.
So that's always been very complicated for folks, because they want to do the right thing, but it's, their hands are tied. And our hands are tied in many ways in the church. So what's your background with that situation, with ethical vaccines?
Well, Margie, we began our work when I found out about these vaccines that had been produced using aborted fetal cell lines. And, you know, I saw this as a huge red flag and problem, because it was so closely tied, again, to wanting to use embryos. In fact, our legislators that were proponents of embryonic stem cell research were justifying it by using the vaccines as an excuse to do that, you know, research, and saying, well, look at all the good we got out of these aborted babies, and nobody has any problem with using those cell lines, which, of course, was not true. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the same time, all the state laws across the country, with the exception of Mississippi and West Virginia, allowed religious exemptions. And so Catholics were taking recourse to that. As more and more people began to find out about these vaccines, they would begin to file religious exemptions. Unfortunately, the state officials had dug up an article that they had found had been written, you know, years previously, that had said about these vaccines, and saying it was morally okay. And so they were using this against Catholics, and they were actually persecuting them and saying, you know, if you're Catholic, you don't get a religious exemption. So in order to protect the right of conscience for our parents, actually, this is interesting, because all this that we're hearing right now, you know, in the rights of conscience, it was being addressed back years ago, and parents were being denied that right. So that caused us to actually go to the Vatican and seek assistance for parents, because we needed something that we'd be able to help them with. And we actually had a parent who had called the Vatican for help, and they had no idea. She actually picked up the phone and called the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith.
Wow.
Yeah.
How does that happen? I mean, I wouldn't even think of calling the Vatican.
I would never say. I know. I was so proud of her. I was like, wow, that's really great. Can I have their phone number?
And they spoke her language?
Yeah. Well, it was great, because the person who happened to answer the phone spoke English.
Oh,
it
wonderful.
Was English. It was Monsignor Charles Brown, and some of your listeners may know of him. And he listened to what she said and said, well, gee, I've never heard of anything like this. So he said they would look into it. That parent, actually, the reason for her phone call is because her children were being expelled from school over the chickenpox vaccine, and they weren't going to allow her the religious exemption. So this was the state in Arkansas. And so When she did contact me and told me she'd called the Vatican, I actually called Monsignor Brown myself the next day because I wanted him to know it was not isolated to just Arkansas, but this was a national problem. This was happening to Catholics everywhere. And so Monsignor Brown told me at that point that he wanted me to prepare two sets of documents. One would be sent to him, was a copy for himself, and the other should be prepared for then Cardinal Ratzinger.
And wow.
So, yeah, yep. So I put together two extensive packages of information with all the background on the abortions and so forth, and I sent it to him. And he told me that in the meantime, parents were to follow the church teaching on moral conscience, and that to turn away from that conscience would be a grave error. And that was all we needed. That was absolutely what we needed. So what happened is parents now had something that they could go by. They could use the church teaching on conscience, and the state stopped their harassment. And when that Vatican document actually came out 3 years later, it supported them. So
yeah.
it was a great thing.
Yeah, so but now on vaccines that are produced in this unethical way,
mm-hmm.
You know, there how many are produced this way? Are, you know, the wide majority of them?
No, actually, the vast majority of the vaccines that are produced are done morally, but there are several that have that are not produced morally, and they have no moral option for parents. Mm-hmm. In some cases, for example, there's I'll take, for example, the polio vaccine. There are polio vaccines produced morally.
Mm-hmm.
The parents can go and they can ask just for the polio vaccine. They can ask for even some of the combination vaccines. But there's one that's called Pentacell, and it combines the DTaP vaccine with Hib and polio, and that one they chose to use aborted fetal cell lines.
Wow.
Absolutely unnecessary to do it.
Yeah.
The MMR vaccine, the chickenpox vaccine, hepatitis A vaccine for adults, the shingles vaccine, these are all produced using aborted fetal cell lines. There are some under development that have not come to market yet that are being produced, or, you know, they're through clinical trials, they're using aborted fetal cell lines. So the problem is not going away. It seems to be getting worse.
Now, if there's a family out there and they've given, you know, their child the MMR vaccine,
mm-hmm.
and it's the one that's, not tainted, but yeah, I guess you could say tainted,
uh-huh.
produced in this immoral fashion. But if they've done that, what would you tell someone like that?
Well, I did it. I mean, I can't. Mm-hmm. You can't blame the parents. Most of them don't know, and it. You know, we believe they have a right to know, and then make that decision based on what is right for their child and based on the current, you know, situation. Let's say from a health perspective, but it's up to the parents to make that decision for their children. I mean, I didn't know, and this was one of the reasons why I took this on. As a parent, I felt like I was violated. I felt like I'd given these vaccines to my children. Someone should have told me.
Mm-hmm.
What happened because of that, in fact, we had parents in one state that were going to file a civil lawsuit against the pharmaceutical industry and the government because they weren't told. And had they been told, they could have filed the religious exemption. So it's a valid point. So we talked to attorneys about that, actually, and they felt the best way to handle it would be to have through legislative efforts that where we could actually have parents being given the information up front, that the labeling should be required, that they be given informed consent. And that's great, makes sense. I mean, it's this is nonpartisan type of legislation. It's not even really a pro-life issue. It's a consumer right to know.
Sure.
So that legislation is still out there and pending with something that we're working on.
One follow-up question, though, is if now are you saying you're not saying that if somebody decides to just go with the MMR, they're not sinning?
No. I should tell your listeners, the Vatican was very clear in their Pontifical Academy for Life in their statement. It was an 8-page document, and they went over the various levels of cooperation. Now, a parent who uses these vaccines because of needs of health. Are allowed to do so because of the fact that it's considered remote material cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
And what that really means is that the distance between you as the end user of the vaccine versus the original abortion is remote enough so that it is not considered a serious sin to use them. However, and this is the caveat, if your conscience were to tell you, if you in your most intimate relationship with God feel that you absolutely cannot do that because of your your moral convictions, the teachings of the church on the sanctity of life. The Vatican respects that conscience, and they told parents it was right to abstain if it could be done without significant risk. And so it's something that has to be weighed carefully. The other thing is that Vatican document was written for the entire world, not just the U.S. Mm-hmm. And here in the U.S., for example, the rubella was one of the main focuses in their document. Rubella has been eliminated in the U.S. So we're in a situation right now, especially, where we have a very good opportunity to possibly make a good conscientious objection and impact the industry at the same time. Because we know that as long as we continue to use these vaccines, the response from the pharmaceutical industry has been, well, everyone's using them, so it's okay. Yeah. Nobody has a problem with this. But one of the other things that was very, very key in the Vatican document was they said there was a grave responsibility to make an objection to these vaccines, to put pressure on the industry to end the injustice. And in all cases, if there are moral options, there was a grave responsibility to use them. So what was happening is, you know, as we're going through this and we're working through the legislative efforts and so forth, I have to tell you, my prayers were about to be answered because there was one company that was a wonderful thing.
Well, you know, hey, well, let's hold on to that. We're going to head to a quick break, and when we come back, we will get back into this conversation, try to restart it right where you're at. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we'll talk more with Debbie about these ethical vaccines or unethical vaccines and what to do about them. So stay tuned to more Life Talk.
If someone close to us begins to talk about their childhood sexual abuse, many of us don't know how to respond. The Archdiocese of Chicago's Office of Assistance Ministry is offering a one-day workshop for family and friends of victim survivors of childhood sexual abuse. A licensed clinical social worker will lead the program that will be offered on Saturday, February 4th. For more information, call Kathleen Legdis at 312-534-5268. That's Kathleen Legdis at 312-534-5268.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son isn't a number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
Most interment arrangements at the 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries are made through a pre-need plan. Your thoughtful planning today is economically prudent and contributes to peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Catholic Cemeteries counselors are available at your convenience. For more information, call 708-449-6100. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back to Life Talk. This is your host, Margie Mansko-Breen, Director of the Respect Life Office for the Archdiocese of Chicago. And I am joined in studio by Emily Warpinski, my Youth Outreach Coordinator, and who's sitting here just like in awe of all this information. It's so shocking. And we have our special guest, Debbie Vinej, Executive Director of Children of God for Life. She's on the phone with us. Debbie, continue on. I'm sorry I had to rudely interrupt you as you were going to get into something really big. I'm like, this sounds like it's going to take time. So,
well, that's good, Margie. It was a good place to break. I was stating it before the break that we were about to have our prayers answered after, going through this for 8 years. I was kind of at one of those moments, a crisis, and where I was having a crisis of faith and praying to God and saying, Lord, I've been doing this so long, and it seems like we're just not getting anywhere, and we have so many problems out there, and we're not getting our legislation passed, and the pharmaceutical companies are getting worse, and so I was praying and asking the Lord to send somebody to me, some sort of sign. In fact, it was funny. It was December, and I will not forget this ever. I was kneeling in prayer, and I asked the Lord, I said, I never put a timeline on you before, but I'm about to. I said, I really did. I said, I've been doing this so long, and I really don't even know if you want me to continue this way. It just doesn't seem like I'm doing anything or having an effect. And so I said, I'm going to lay down this cross. I said, if I don't get some kind of signal from you, some sign, Lord, that you want me to continue to do this, I'm going to lay this cross down. And I told him, I said, I don't want to do this, but I just need to know you want me to, that I'm on the right path. So Margie, it was a very intense time of prayer for me.
Mm-hmm.
2 days later, I got a phone call from this woman who I'd never met before by I would say it's not a freak accident. I always say it's always provisional. This is divine intervention. She found out about what we were doing. She is an adult stem cell scientist. Her name is Dr. Teresa Deischer. She's got just years of experience in the biopharmaceutical industry, and she was working for companies that were kind of pressuring her into moving away from her moral research. And she has 22 patents in her name. For heaven's sake, she's very, highly accredited scientist, right? And so she was being pressured to start using immoral cell lines and so forth, and the Vatican document came out. So she looked at this as a need for her to respond, and she formed a company known as Sound Choice Pharmaceutical. They are a nonprofit, and after speaking to her, she agreed that they would provide moral alternatives for these vaccines.
Mm.
So this was huge for us. This was definitely an answer to prayer. And of course, I was back on my knees again, just crying and saying, "Oh Lord, I should have trusted you. I didn't. Thank you for the quick response."
Wow. Yeah.
To make it even funnier, it just happens that the main company, the nonprofit arm, is Sound Choice, but the main company happens to be named Ave Maria Biotechnology. So, and her phone call came on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. I just couldn't have asked for more signs. So, from God's response. So, this is what her work has been, is to, first of all, she began looking at these vaccines. And I can tell you that right now there's some very, very disturbing information that she's finding. First of all, the levels of DNA and the aborted fetal DNA in those vaccines is way above the FDA allowance. They allow only 10 nanograms of DNA per vial, okay, because they recognize the danger when there are high levels of DNA. Her studies are showing in excess of 100 to 200 nanograms in each vial of the vaccines.
Hmm.
She's been and studying the effects of what that DNA can do. It's very, very interesting. She has presented her findings to the National Institutes of Health and has presented them to the FDA. Now, she's getting a little bit of roadblock, and I want all your listeners to know, for those who may have heard her name out in the media, she is one of the two doctors, the scientists, that filed the lawsuit to stop federal funding of embryonic stem cell research against the Obama administration. Sure. So now she's getting blackballed. They don't like her. Obviously, they don't like her. So she is, they're doing little tactics that are kind of stalling her from moving forward and to get the recognition she needs and to get those studies to be published and out there and get funding for those studies as well. So,
yeah.
So anyway, so her work is tremendous. What she'd like to accomplish for parents is huge. This is definitely an answer to our prayers. So I hope everyone will definitely take a look at her work and what's going on. SoundChoice.org is their organization.
So when I'm going to go off on a tangent just briefly, and then
sure.
we can come back. So let's not try to go too off on this one. But you talked about the DNA, and I guess having that high level, and I guess most people don't know the different. What's a nanogram? Or,
you know? Oh, like, don't ask me to go into that. That's like the
that's the science. Yeah,
yeah.
We don't.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, I take vitamins, and there's micrograms and milligrams or whatever, you know, I kind of know what that is, but it's still it's sort of meaningless to me.
It is. Well, to give you an idea, things get measured in, you know, in grams. For example, the chickenpox vaccine. Now, this is a good one. The chickenpox vaccine has what's called UGs, U-grams, you know, in them. And they have, the chickenpox vaccine has over 2 U-grams, all right? That would be equal to 2,000 nanograms. The FDA says 10 nanograms. They've got 2,000. It's way... See, there's no oversight on these. There's like no oversight from the FDA as these vaccines are being produced.
Yeah.
So they're supposed to, what happens and how that DNA actually gets in the vaccine is they culture viruses on cell lines, and those cell lines cling to the virus. Now, there's an attempt to remove that virus, you know, from the cell line, and they wash it and so forth, but you can't get rid of it. So that DNA stays there. Originally, they had actually made the amount of DNA allowed in the vaccines much lower than 10 nanograms. But the pharmaceutical industry came back and said, we can't do that. We can't. There's absolutely no way for us to even produce the vaccines. We can't get the DNA out. So the FDA raised the standard to 10.
Yeah.
And they still can't do it.
Oh.
And so it's very concerning. What the problem is that because babies' brain cells, when your children are getting these vaccines, when babies' brain cells are developing, the brain cells go through periods of where they, you know, they die, right? That's how the brain cells replenish themselves. They grow, they die, they grow, they die. And a child gets a vaccine while this is going on that has the aborted fetal DNA. That DNA has the ability to insert itself into the genome of that child's developing brain cells, and it triggers autoimmune responses, and it can cause things like autism, autism spectrum disorder, leukemia, all types of problems. Her studies are falling along completely in line with previous studies that were done showing children that were getting, that were part of a program, they were getting some therapies done, the bubble boy therapies. They actually had the same retrovirus that's in these vaccines was being inserted into the babies, these boys' cells, and what they found out in the fetal DNA was actually present in 4 out of the 9 boys. They found it, so they know that this is happening, and they know it's dangerous. But
well, I mean, all the reporting you see, they say vaccines, you know, on children have no impact on. You know, there's no connection,
right?
Because of that flawed study, that study that was supposedly linking autism to vaccines was all made up.
Right. Well, what they did is, you know, what the problem was, Margie, if they were looking at autism versus in the vaccines, the relationship between mercury in vaccines, they never once studied the DNA.
Oh.
And
okay.
had they done that, had they really, if they had gone in and looked at it, they would have found out, number one, we've never had mercury in our MMR vaccine, never. They did in the United Kingdom, which is where Dr. Andrew Wakefield was, but they never did here. And if they had looked, there was actually a study by the Environmental Protection Agency where they showed the years that they noticed autism was spiking across not just the United States but across other countries, and they identified those years. There's only one factor in common in every one of those years. Do you know what it was? It was the same year that an aborted fetal vaccine was introduced to the public.
Oh, my goodness.
Whether it's in the United States, the United Kingdom, Japan, Sweden, everywhere. You know, it would happen here in the United States. We'd see a spike in autism, for example, in 1981. That was the year that Merck's vaccine was fully licensed. There was no other MMR vaccine available in the United States except that autism spikes. You see it happen again in the United Kingdom the same time that theirs was introduced, and again, everywhere across continents. So it's really, her studies are just so compelling and need to get the recognition that they deserve. The FDA has also acknowledged they know this is a problem. So they are doing further studies on it. There's a fallacy kind of out there that they have said, nope, there's no link. Actually, the Center for Disease Control and the FDA are conducting additional studies.
Okay. Well, I mean, when you look at these pharmaceutical companies, they're huge. There's billions of dollars involved, and you know, they're going to do whatever they can to make sure that they can still sell this product, you know.
That's right.
And I guess if you owned, you know, a company worth that much money, you would do what you could do, you know, and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, we're going to be in real trouble. It's like the tobacco industry, or, you know, worse.
Right.
But we're going to need to head to a quick break right now. When we return, I want to ask you more about what, you know, the food products, I guess,
sure,
that are used or enhanced through use of aborted fetal tissue. So stay tuned to more Life Talk.
Pledge to run 26.2 miles in the 2012 Bank of America Chicago Marathon on October 7th with Team Catholic Charities. As a member of the team, you'll make a difference in the lives of more than 200,000 people in our emergency assistance programs in Cook and Lake Counties. Registration for the marathon is open and will sell out quickly, so join Team Catholic Charities today. You can also sponsor the team or join a committee. Call 312-655-7912 or visit www.catholiccharities.net/Chicago Marathon, and we'll see you at the finish line.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
During the next half hour, we'll talk to Cardinal George about his ad limina visit to Rome and about turning 75. We'll show you highlights of the recent Posada on the streets surrounding Holy Name Cathedral. And our stewardship and development director will talk about all the good that comes from money collected during the annual Catholic Appeal.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You, compelling television about your Archdiocese.
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future. Today, the Catholic New World is better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Chicagoland Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization. Visit our website at catholicnewworld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777. Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Welcome back to Life Talk. This is your host, Margie Mansko-Breen, Director of the Respect Life Office. And before we get back to Debbie Vinej, I want Emily Warpinski here to give you guys an update on some upcoming activities that I know you're going to want to be a part of.
Marjorie, our office has got two big activities coming up for the month of March, and I'm very excited about both of them. March 8th, we're doing a lobby day with Pro-Life Action League.
Speak Out Illinois,
yeah. And we're heading down to Springfield, March 8th. And then another project that we're doing, this is the first time ever in Chicago, so we're so excited. We're doing a Theology of the Body conference, and that's going to be Saturday, March 31st. It's going to be an all-day conference, and we're bringing in speakers from all over the country. Damon Owens, Katrina Zeno, Father Bouquet, Father Loya is going to be there. And there's going to be an English track and a Spanish track. So Cardinal George is going to celebrate Mass for us. We're going to bring people in from all over the country, and hopefully we're going to have thousands of participants at this conference.
Well, I hope not too many, because we'll have to turn them away.
Well, I hope we're not turning people away, but
no,
it's going to be great. We're really excited. And more information can be found on our website at www.respectlifechicago.org or call our office, 312-534-5355.
And then for the lobby date, yeah, just check out, well, actually call us and we'll give you information if you want to be a part of it. There'll be a nominal fee. I don't know how much it'll be yet, but it will be small, because at the Speak Out Illinois conference, we asked for donations and a lot of people were generous. So
yeah,
and that'll help defray the cost of that trip down to Springfield. So Debbie, back to you. Oh my gosh, we have 10 minutes left here and we got to talk about the products, you know, the companies that are using aborted fetal tissue, right, to enhance their flavors and test products, a whole range of things, right? What's going on with this, and what are those companies, and then I guess, you know, to keep it flowing, what can we do?
Okay. First of all, at the company, they're not actually using tissue, so we need to get that straight, but that's okay. There was tissue originally involved. There's a company by the name of Synomics, and they are a company that produces flavor enhancers, and they do it using what they call a proprietary taste receptor program. And what that means, actually, is that they'll use a cell line that to elicit a response that would let them know if they've achieved the proper flavor. There are cells, whether they're human cells or whether they're animal cells or insect cells or several, that have a specific protein that actually interacts when it in the lab. So we found out about Synomics doing this a couple years ago when we first began contacting them directly. We looked at their patents, and they had at the time some 70 patents. I have 77. I think they're up over 90 of them now. But at the time, we looked through them, and we could see that they were using human embryonic kidney cells. But yet at the same time, they listed all these other cell lines they could use. So we wrote to them and said, hey, look, you know, there's a lot of pro-life people here who are going to upset. Don't do that. And by the way, if we don't hear back from you, we're going to go to your collaborators that you have listed on your website, because they actually had contracts with several food companies to develop their flavor enhancers. And these flavor enhancers, what they do is they would reduce the salt or the sugars and those type of things. You know, they're actually chemicals that trick your brain into thinking you're getting something sweet or something salty, but it's actually not a real flavor. And so what they're able to do then is reduce the amount of salt and the sugar by doing this. So anyway, that's kind of a very short explanation for a long process. We went to the food companies that were involved at the time. We wrote to Coca-Cola. We wrote to Campbell Soup. We wrote to PepsiCo. We wrote to Kraft Foods Division Cadbury Adams, LLC. They make gums and chewing gums and so forth. And we told them, you know, that you need to go to Synomics and tell them to put a stop to this. Well, we had the two most profound letters we received in response. The first one came from Campbell Soup. And Campbell Soup said to us that the relationship they had built with their customers was not worth compromising over bottom line or profit margins. And so we were very, excited, because we thought, great, Campbell's is going to listen to us. Maybe they'll do something. But we never heard back from them what direction they would take. And this was early 2011 when we first got that response from Campbell's. At the same time, we got a response from Pepsi that said, we want to reassure you that our relationship with Synomics is only to produce lower-calorie, great-tasting beverages. They did not care about the moral, sensibilities of people. They went so far as to call this the gold standard of research for the industry to use aborted fetal cell lines.
Yeah.
They were completely oblivious to what the public was saying, and so we started a boycott. We began boycotting their products. We did that. Boycott, by the way, has now grown international. We have nearly a dozen foreign countries that have joined in this boycott of Pepsi products. We filed a shareholder resolution last fall. Well, we didn't. Actually, a stockholder did, because they want to hold Pepsi's ethical standards to include a human rights amendment that would forbid them from doing exactly what they are doing, aborted fetal research. Pepsi paid $30 million up front to Synomics for these flavor enhancers for their future beverages, and they'll pay them royalties on every product that's sold using their flavor enhancers. So they have the ability, you know, to make a difference and to stop this. But they haven't been listening.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's kind of what had happened. In the meantime, I should tell you, when we did our first press release in March of last year, and we included Campbell's in the list of companies, within 4 hours of our press release, Campbell's called us, and they said, I want to let you know that we had a board meeting earlier this month, and we've made the decision to sever all ties with Sonomics. So we were thrilled, because we knew, you know, what a glaring difference there was between the action that Campbell's Soup took and the action that Pepsi took. And we immediately went out and told people, write to Campbell's and thank them. You know, this is a great thing that they've done. So, you know, we know we can have some success there if we can get people rallied and united to boycott Pepsi products right now. They're the ones that have the ability to change. Unfortunately, Nestle's has food on the market right now that's already using the Sonomics flavor enhancers. They also have, Cadbury Adams does as well. And for your listeners, we do have these a list on our website. It's a one-page flyer that you can download that lists these products we're boycotting, all on one page.
What's your website?
Is www.cogforlife, that's cogforlife.org. And there's a huge section. They can click on breaking news, and you'll see there's a whole slew of our press releases and information on this Sonomics and the Pepsi boycott. And then I guess, meanwhile, you know about what happened last week. The secular media got a hold of a bill.
Oh, yeah. In Oklahoma, right? There's Oklahoma State Senator Ralph Shorty, I think is his name.
Correct.
And he put a piece of legislation out to ban the use of food products made this way. And so what happened with him? And have you been talking with him? Or how did he know to do this?
He found out about it through the boycott, because it is far-reaching. This information has gone viral. I have never, Margie, honestly, in the 12 years we've been doing this, I have never seen such outrage by the public as there is over this Sonomics and the use of the aborted fetal cell lines for the food development. It's not in the food product, so it's not like we're consuming it. It doesn't matter. People are still just disgusted. When you think about lifting a glass of Pepsi to your lips and thinking about, you know, how it came about, that kind of thing is just weighing very heavily on people's hearts. And I, you know, God bless the senator for doing this, because first of all, his bill needs a little work. The legislative wording on that is not correct. He needs to make it so that it's more in line with what's actually happening out in the industry. He made the statement that aborted fetus is in the food. That, of course, is not there. And that caused him to get a lot of public backlash from the media.
Yeah.
They were ridiculing him. So we did talk to him. We did talk to his office, and we're going to help him and work with him in any way possible to get that through.
Wow, yeah. I mean, people need to get educated completely before they try to put out legislation like that.
Well, yeah.
I think
he was very zealous about it, and then, you know, I appreciated that because he really does have a chance to make a difference. And, you know, Margie, it was funny because his legislation said that if it was used in the food itself, or if it was used in the development of the food, aborted fetal material, and he might be closer to the truth than a lot of people realize.
Okay,
we're working on something, and I really can't disclose the full details.
Yeah, we only have a couple minutes left, so
right. But there is a potential. There's a company out there that is actually got a product and a patent, and in their patent they state that this could be. It uses aborted fetal material, could be used in food because it would provide nutrients for the consumer. And I was absolutely flabbergasted when I saw this. So that's going to take a little more research on our part. But I just want to bring that to your attention for your listeners, because the senator is not off base in what he's saying at all.
Oh, my goodness. So how do people stay? Do you have a list, an email list, that people can sign up for to find out about that company when the news does come out?
Absolutely. We have the easiest way, obviously, is you can connect with us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page where you can join our group. And we also have a page that does just the feeds, you know, so that you can get the news feeds. And if you don't really care about posting questions and reading and digging through things, the news press releases will be out there immediately. You can get connected to that, and you'll get it as soon as our press releases go out.
Okay, and give us the website again.
Oh, our website is www.cogforlife.org, and on Facebook we're under Children of God for Life.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll have to have you back in a few months, or I don't know, we'll have to figure it out. But usually these conversations that are so detailed, I think they need days. You know, we need to have you out to give a lecture or something.
That's
but
nice.
Thanks so much, and God bless your efforts.
Thank you, Margie.
You're welcome. Okay. Well, we're out of time for this February 2012 edition of Life Talk. Remember to tune in on the first Wednesday of every month from 9 to 10 a.m. on 950 a.m. Relevant Radio. For Emily Warpinski, this is Margie Breen, and may God bless you.